Welcome in. Time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
Hey, welcome in Thursday Daily Editorial. Our editorial today is going to be discussing exactly what you folks wanted us to discuss yesterday. I want to start out by thanking you guys for basically giving us the suggestions that you gave us, how you thought we could make the show better. Some topics that we have not been emphasizing enough recently, I think that's true. I also want to thank very much Irish Tony and Out of the Box Jerry for the kudos that they gave us for the show. I really appreciate that. Jim and I do spend an awful lot of time on this program. I probably spent in the neighborhood of 5 or 6 hours yesterday. I actually addressed in writing every comment that you turned in, and I put together a daily editorial without Jim where I would verbally address these comments. I did that about 6 times. I was not happy with the content that I personally put out, so I decided to wait until this morning for Jim. There are some very important subjects that you guys are focused on, and Jim and I are focused on them too. Perhaps we don't give enough attention to those subjects right now. I want to say that the situation in Ukraine certainly is the most important topic facing the population of the world right now because of what that can morph into. It can certainly morph into, if people are really stupid, a nuclear war, but I personally don't think that's going to happen. That's a subject that we're going to be talking about on the weekend show. Jimmy, let's start out with the Ukraine. You feel there are basically 3 things at stake here, and I agree with you. They are.
Yeah, so I think there's 3 actual wars going on. The first one's a culture war. The second one's an information war. The third one's the actual military conflict, the fight that's going on. And and I think understanding it, looking at it from that perspective may help kind of, you know, put this in a box that people can understand.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Let's go ahead and do that right now. Let's start with that. Now, I want to talk about the one that is a little hard for some people to accept, but I think it's very real, and that is the culture war.
Yeah, so I think the culture war, when you talk about the most important pressing thing, you know, Ukraine right now, I think that's the acute problem. You know, that's the immediate problem right now that the world faces, the potential for expansion with NATO, Russia, potential nuclear war, which would be absolutely devastating.
Yes, it would.
But what is actually the long term, the real problem is kind of the cultural challenges out there that we're facing world. And it's actually being represented somewhat in the fight in Ukraine. Let me explain my thought. And that is, you've got this push between kind of liberal extremism, progressivism that's been taking hold in the West. Mm-hmm. In Western ideologies, you know, with all things are okay, that and then of course corporate global corporate, I call it corporate authoritarianism, in order for, you know, or authoritarian capitalism, with taking over control for a globalist move, and that's a real struggle right now, and it gets right down into faith and religion. Yep. And in Ukraine, you've got this guy Zelensky that is, you know, kind of a Hollywood product. You know, he's an actor.
He was a comedian. He was a stand-up comedian. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, very famous and did things there. Actually had a very popular TV show, one of the most popular in the country, acting as president. Well, now he's come to reality, but he represents something that is very fearful for people in conservative, say, orthodox circles, because of the push towards LGBTQ, the push towards this suppression of information. Of course, it goes both ways and both sides, but you see with Zelensky actually trying to shut down the Orthodox Church inside Ukraine that, you know, those fears are actually being exacerbated and making people even more conscious of this expansion of liberalism, liberal ideology, moving towards Russia. So that's one of the impetuses.
Well, I mean, let me just interject something on that, and that is I was raised in the Russian Orthodox Church, and then I flipped over to the Catholic Church when Kathy and I got married, and I flipped over in deference to her wishes, not her wishes, but so we could, you know, basically worship together in the same church. I will say that the Russian Orthodox Church is pretty conservative. A lot of the issues that are going on in the United States, which I would call moral issues, but I'm not making a judgment, but they are explained, they are dealt with very effectively in the Bible, in both the Old Testament and the New Testament. And it doesn't take a genius to figure out what the Bible has to say about some of the progressive ideas, you know, when it comes to things like same-sex marriage, et cetera, et cetera. I can see where Putin could be very concerned about that subject and didn't want to see that type of society evolve in Russia.
Right. And I think so that's exactly a bit of the culture war, but it's also this globalism thing too. So the conservative nature of the Orthodox Church, Putin actually, you know, he's been very supportive of the Orthodox Church, but you have to remember and you have to look back through the Soviet times. The only way the Orthodox Church survived under the Soviet administration was by actually being a participant with them.
Yeah.
So there is a fear, and this is, you know, you've got to take a look at both sides of this. There is a fear that they are so connected to the Putin administration in Ukraine that in fact they will influence and shape and continue to undermine the efforts of the combat operations. And this is where we transition from the culture war into the information warfare, and then in the information warfare rolls in, ultimately into the military conflict.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge. It's a fight. I think many of us, you know, my wife's Greek Orthodox, and I attend Greek Orthodox Church with her. And I, you know, my basic philosophy is very conservative. There's no question. I'm not going to argue that with anybody. And so I understand that cultural fight and the concern of what's happened in Western society, certainly in the major urban areas of Berlin or Paris and of course, London, where you've got this kind of almost dystopian future that's evolving in those Western ideologies that at once had very deep cultural roots but are now being destroyed by globalization.
Yeah.
And this is where I think Tommy makes very good points in his recommendations to continue talking about the globalization and then that this kind of push for one world government. And that's where I think people see Putin. Some people see Putin as maybe the answer to that. I don't necessarily agree that he's the answer to it, but I certainly understand this part of the fight.
Yeah.
And then transitioning to number two, the information warfare, that's really the propaganda going back and forth between using these tools and these arguments on both sides in order to show, you know, you're hearing from left, progressive left, the Biden administration, you know, NATO and the Western allies. Oh, this is about democracy. It's about democracy. You know, it's not necessarily about democracy. It's about fear and it's about self-interest of these nations. Many of the people in Western, and this is what people have to realize, and you've got to understand it. Many people that lived under the former Soviet rule in Eastern Europe that are now Westernized and NATO members, they're still conservative. Hungary's one, Poland's one, Czech Republic's one. They're conservative, but they are very much afraid of the Russian overlords that controlled them in the past, which is why they immediately joined NATO.
Yeah.
So that conflict right there makes it difficult on a military perspective for Vladimir Putin. And here's I'm gonna go transition to the military piece of it. Why it's such a challenge for him?
Okay.
Russia is basically about ranked number 11 in global economic power. Right. It's number one in number of nuclear weapons with over 4,000 nuclear weapons, a lot of tactical nuclear weapons, but economic power is really based on its energy resources that are put to the West, to more developed countries. In the top 10 global economic powers, six of them are NATO members. Six of them.
Yeah.
Above Russia. Of the top 25, about 10 or 12 are actually in the top 25 economies are in NATO members.
Yeah.
So what the challenge for Vladimir Putin, and this is why I do not believe that there's a real threat of nuclear war, is that he has committed a large force inside Ukraine to work on this eastern area and to try to maintain Crimea. And as he's put those large forces in there, he's actually had to pull forces out of areas like Kaliningrad. He had to pull a whole motorized rifle division out of Kaliningrad, about 12,000 troops to go reinforce in the Ukraine conflict. He's had to move other resources from the Polish border.
Yeah.
He's, of course, the same along the Baltic borders with those NATO members. So he's, in spite of the fact that NATO was the big threat, he's actually having to pull his resources down there. He's expending, this has gone on for a long time now. We're approaching 10 months.
Yeah.
In the 24th of December will be about 10 months since he started this conflict. He's going to have a really tough time sustaining this level of expense when you have these massive Western powers and NATO members continuing to supply Zelensky. And whether you agree with it or not, as long as there's manpower for Ukrainian forces, the Russians are going to have a very tough time fighting against ever-increasing Western military supplies and logistics support. And the Ukrainians are getting better at it. So militarily, this battle, Russia has lost about half of the territory it gained in its initial efforts and a large portion of the areas that it controlled through the kind of quasi-civil war that was going on in the eastern Ukraine and the Donbass region.
Yeah.
So now they're having to reposition forces. They're having to defend large areas. And unfortunately for the Russian military, they are having to move back. And Kherson was a big loss for them because it actually gives the Ukrainians a very, as we've talked about, a very good position to control the bottleneck supplies into the Crimea.
Yeah.
The Russians have to defend that. And the forces that they've put in there are not well supplied. And they're having I've served all over the world in all kinds of combat zones. The United States will go to war with our allies. You have got Brown and Root. You've got all these, Halliburton, these companies that come in and build massive resources and bases, and soldiers are pretty comfortable. The Russians right now don't have that type of support. So they're living in foxholes and trenches as we go into the winter weather. Now, this is just a reality. The Ukrainian soldiers are having to face the same situation, but it's going to be very difficult for them to maintain morale under these circumstances. And here's the biggest problem, Al. Ukrainians are fighting, in their belief, they're fighting for their life.
Sure.
The Russians, it's very hard to identify what their mission is. When they started the war, it was to push NATO back. It was to stop Nazis, this whole theology of, Nazism in Ukraine. But you're pulling people from these bases all over Russia. You're forcing people back in from, previously serving troops, and then you're conscripting more forces in there. But tell me exactly what their objective is. Help identify what the mission end will be. Without that, commanders and soldiers have a very difficult time maintaining some sort of, morale at all, and they don't fight.
Yeah.
You can see it. The U.S. forces, the same thing happens to them. Vietnam was a great example of it. Afghanistan, the big difference in Afghanistan was we were down to a couple thousand troops, 6,000 troops in the last couple of years.
It was pretty low, yeah.
Yeah, and they knew what they were doing. They had a specific mission. It was counterterrorism. It was to reinforce and train supply the government forces. Now, we pulled the rug out from under that, but everybody knew what their mission was. It was very clear, and there was some sense of, momentum forward until the last minute when everybody pulled out.
Yeah.
In Ukraine, with Russian leadership and this actual fight going on between the Wagner commander and the Chechen commander, actually publicly basically reprimanding this Russian military leadership for their failures, That's a split that's actually really hard to deal with. So Putin's having a tough time maintaining a real, you know, momentum right now. And it's clear he's on the defensive.
Yeah.
Now, there's a push right now to put to have kind of a stall in winter operations so they can resupply, resupport, and then push a big offensive in the spring. It's going to be tough for them to hold on to territory as they lose logistics. And once again, as long as you have massive Western economies pouring weapons into the Ukrainians, increasing their air defense capability, yeah, giving their anti-tank weapon capability, giving them intelligence capability, that's going to make it very difficult for the Russian army to succeed. Regardless of what people wish, these are real challenges.
Well, let me ask you a question, Jimmy. You know, a couple of very interesting points were brought up in much of a macro sense, very definitely a macro sense, about the conflict, you know, between Russia and Ukraine. Frankie, who I really appreciate some of his comments, said that he feels that the Ukraine conflict is a direct result of people behind what he calls the Third World Order. I don't think that's such a funny statement. I think that that could be, I think one could argue that convincingly. I don't know where Soros is throwing his money right now, but I would bet that he's probably throwing it some way in kind of that direction. I'd like a comment from you on that, and then I have another comment that Irish Tony brought up.
Yeah, so I think that there are people that are using the Ukraine war. There's no question that the Biden administration, in my view, knew what was going to happen, yeah, and they sat back on it. There's no question on it. And they made some very dumb mistakes publicly stating that, hey, it's okay if the Russians take the eastern Ukraine. They did not pull together an Article 4 meeting with senior military leadership prior when they had intelligence that the Russians would be moving towards Kiev. And that happened probably in October or November at the latest. They knew when they were evacuating the embassies in January and they're evacuating and then, you know, pulling everybody out in February, what was going to happen. So they failed miserably. NATO failed miserably. The one, you know, group that is laughing out there are the arms dealers, the military industrial complex. They're like, okay, we're getting rich off of this.
You bet they are.
Billions and billions of dollars into weapons and equipment as this goes forward. And of course, the people that always lose are the poor little soldiers and the families that are getting, you know, that are being used as cannon
exactly,
fodder.
Exactly, exactly.
So on the point and the question of the Third World Order, I think people that want globalization and that want to have come out and say, well, we need to stop things like this and want one world government, I think they appreciate it. I think industrialists that especially involved in arms industries, they want this. They've allowed this to continue on.
Of course. And I would assume that the amount of support that they're giving for the continued conflict is actually significant. Now, I want to bring up...
Jimmy. You know, it's not just in the West.
Yeah.
I mean, the Russian arms dealers and those oligarchs that control those industries, they're making a fortune off of this.
Of course they are, yeah.
So, you know, all sides, nobody's being a winner here. Everyone's being a loser, in my view,
right,
except the people that think they're making a ton of money off of
right.
this. And that's disgusting.
It's very disgusting, in my opinion. Now, Tony brought up one thing. Irish Tony brought up one thing that I think is pretty interesting. He says that, in his opinion, the Ukraine conflict is simply a proxy war between NATO as an organization and its member countries and Russia. I think that's it's a hell of an interesting point, Gordon, that you brought up.
No, it's a fact. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
And the Biden administration has made that very clear, that they want to degrade Russian military capabilities to the point where they cannot do this again. And
right.
of course, NATO membership and leadership are all involved in this in supporting Ukrainian actions. They're not supporting negotiations. They're not supporting stopping the fighting. What they're doing is supporting a continuation here. And of course, part of that is, you know, how Zelensky's going to push it as far as he possibly can, as long as he's got those big guys to back him up in the back. Now, there's a certain level of, I understand, if you think this through, if Russia actually fails if Putin fails, first of all, that's going to be very destabilizing to the Russian government because he is the authoritarian leader right now. He's the oligarch that runs it.
Yeah.
He's on, I mean, on the oligarchic team that runs it. And he's the basically the head of the that particular organization. So what happens if he loses and he has to leave? And he's going to, you know, he's not going to live forever. He's going to die. And he's probably got some problems. As I look at him now, I see that he's definitely under stress. So what happens after that? And then, okay, what's NATO's purpose when you get to the point where your one biggest foe on your border for Europe goes away?
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, this is exactly what you mean, Jimmy. Exactly.
This is a big challenge for NATO, right?
Yeah.
So if Putin goes away, then maybe their justification for existence goes away. So
maybe.
Is Putin going to go away? Are they going to allow it? Or are they just going to continue to try to do this damage and degrading? I think it's a very interesting question and a very good point for people to consider.
Yeah, I think it is a very good point, actually. I think the Ukraine is a situation right now that is a box of firecrackers waiting for some seven-year-old to light, personally. And I would like to talk about the Ukraine perhaps more and more than perhaps we have in the past. Got a number of questions for you, Jimmy, that were brought up, and I'd like to weigh in on some of those questions also. But unfortunately, we're up to about 22 minutes, so let me close this thing out simply by saying to our family, you guys are family, we're part of your family, you're part of our family. This is the University of, I don't recall what Tony called it, but, you know, Tony said this is a great source for him of information on what's going on in the world. I agree 100%. If there's anything at all you want Jimmy and I to focus on the weekend show, I do personally want to talk about the fact that same-sex marriage passed in both the Senate and the House. That was announced this morning. I have some interesting thoughts about that. I don't think I'm necessarily the ruler of the world, and I think all I can do is give an opinion on what I think about it. And my opinion is not necessarily anything other than my opinion, because God has the final word. I really believe that. Jimmy, like I said, we're up to about 22, almost 23 minutes right now. Any way you want to close this up?
I just think there's plenty of interesting things out there. This Brittany Griner exchange, unbelievable.
Yeah.
What happened with that? We've got, you know, this, there's actually some very interesting information on a potential Supreme Court case that could, if in fact they hear it, would have a very major impact on the 2020 election. We probably should talk about this weekend on the show.
And we'll do that.
Yeah, there's a lot of different views and takes out there. The Ukraine issue is a tough one. And I think that, you know, kind of watching this over a period of time, I mean, the Russians, if they didn't get it done right away, they have a long haul to go. And I think that's very problematic for them.
Yeah, I do too. Jim, thanks for your time. But more importantly, we are not getting compensated. I want you guys to know that for this. We're doing it out of a passion to provide what we feel is informative, factual information about situations that are going on in the world. Tony, Tommy, out of the box, everybody else, Eddie, CFS, we're not doing it without you. You are very definitely a part of this. When you're unhappy with something, simply let us know. And God bless you all.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics.